for her what she would think you would do, because I wanted to see how they tipped. Well, because if they're cheap.
Right.
If they're cheap with a waitress, they're cheap with everybody.
I like that.
And it's a warning bell. It's somebody you really don't want around. If they out of the gate are trying to negotiate everything with you. Now, I have one client I've had for 20 years, and he's an exception to the rule. He is a compulsive negotiator because of the business he's in. He cannot stand to do anything without a negotiation. It's a psychological addiction on his part. And so I overlook it. But for the most part, anybody who needs to get into negotiations with me right out of the gate, well, if we change this, would this reduce this? Would you take a bigger back end and less fee? Can we bust this up into five parts instead of three? As soon as I hear that kind of stuff, I extricate myself as quickly as possible and run, because it indicates they're not going to be a very manageable client. The last thing I would mention is their reputation. Here's sort of a litmus test. I have 10 of them I teach in the Renegade Millionaire system for entrepreneurs, but here's one that's universally applicable. If somebody can't provide three or four people who they've done a deal with, who would say they would cheerfully do another deal with them if they had a chance, you aren't going to be the first to get lucky. If somebody has nothing good to say about anybody who's previously done work for them, you are not going to be the first person they love. 6 months from now, they're going to be telling everybody they know what an idiot you are, too. So their reputation, which they express by what they say about themselves and about others, and what you may know about them in the community or the industry they're in, or what you may be able to find out, is important. I got rid of a client about 2 years ago. In the first month, as it became apparent that every conversation we had, he wanted to tell me about some previous well-known consultant or copywriter who he had given a lot of money to and who had bitterly disappointed him and failed. And it didn't take but a few of these conversations for me to realize that soon I would be on that list, and better sooner than later. So he got discharged. The eighth factor gets us into the issue of niching. And this is a criteria factor. Again, it's for people to decide on their own. But generally speaking, I prefer working in a market niche, a client that is niched, to a market, because it really is fertile ground for a good copywriter to do message-to-market match, or a client who can be market niched. Some copywriters like to media niche. There are copywriters who only do magalogs, or who only do full-page ads, or who only do television scripts, and they may media niche, and that's okay. And if you become extremely adept at something, then that's warranted. It's also wise to remember that there are niches within niches within niches. Again, it's used by dentistry example. There's over a dozen different kinds of dentists. And so there's a very successful copywriter, for example. I know him. He's been to some of my seminars. He's pretty much invisible to the world. He only writes copy for ads, mail pieces, DVDs, and so forth for implant dentists. And he makes about $500,000 a year doing it. And he's mastered it. And so he deliberately gets a dentist in every market area in the country and fundamentally writes the same copy for all of them, and is very successful. But generally speaking, I'd rather have a client who is niched or could be niched. And so those are the eight criteria that I would encourage people to consider as they go out in search of clients.
Great, and we'll be sending out those eight criteria tomorrow. Now, keeping an eye on the clock, Dan, how has your criteria changed over the years now?
Not a lot. Higher fees and compensation demands have sort of changed the ability of a client to spend. You know, it's changed the type of client that you get with this criteria, but the general criteria is still the same. I'm still considering all of these things. The three things that have been added that I consider now that I didn't consider when I was starting out and when I was starving. One is learning curve. I try and avoid situations that require me to learn a business from scratch. So if you showed up on the doorstep tomorrow with a big bag of money and wanted to hire me to write copy to sell bird seed to people who want to get a lot of birds to come into their backyard, I'd probably pass. Because I could fill my calendar with work in industries I already understand.
Right.
So I look for ease and speed. Another thing that has become more important to me late than early is regulatory environments where you have a lot of compliance issues that add time and difficulty and complexity. Financial services, for example.
Uh-huh.
I still have a couple clients in that industry, but I don't seek them. At one time, I sought them. Because you're always going to be dealing with a compliance department and a couple of attorneys who want to rewrite your copy. Weight loss is regulatory sensitive.
Yeah.
And the third thing that's sort of linked to that is risks. Copywriters have liability. And you can only protect yourself so much in contracts, and then you've got to understand you're at risk. And so there are clients who 10 years ago I would do work for who today I wouldn't. Purely because they press the envelope so far in the gray area in which they operate.
Can you give us an example?
Oh, like a weight loss company or a business opportunity company.
Right.
Both industries I do work in, but there are clients who 10 years ago I did work for in those industries who today I politely decline.
I see.
Because every so often they're going to be dealing with the FTC or the FDA or both or the SEC or 20 attorney generals. And I'd rather not be explaining to somebody why I'm exempt.
Got it. Well, I could literally ask you 100 follow-up questions, but I want to keep us moving along. So let's get on to the where.
Okay. Well, there is a little bit of geography. And then I'll give you some more specific things. But there is a little bit of geography, and that is, if you think about it, you could divide your clients into three categories. Local businesses that are based locally in your own area and that pretty much market only locally. Local businesses but that are acquired on a national basis and national companies. So very quickly, a lot of beginners make the mistake of thinking that they can only deal with local clients. And so they're going to go get the local hardware store and the local insurance agent and the funeral parlor in their own area, and that's where they think they have to start working. That's not necessarily bad, but it is an erroneous assumption. Now, the one really good thing to always keep in mind when you are creating for a business that only markets itself locally, like a cemetery, for example, or a doctor, is that what you do for the one in Indianapolis, Indiana, has value to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds more in other parts of the country. And so we talked about contracts in the other call. I mean, if you do that kind of work, you want to retain rights to that work product outside of that market area and be able to turn around and bicycle it and sell it in one form or another based upon its success in market A to somebody in market B. Local clients, meaning clients that market themselves locally, not necessarily that live in your area, but a dentist or a cemetery or, you know, somebody that only markets themselves to their own town, but acquired nationally, can be the very best. So, for example, if you're going to write copy for dentists, rather than just trying to get a dentist in your hometown, it's actually easier to get dentists from different parts of the country by attacking the entire profession. And here's why. The percentages don't change. They haven't changed ever. They probably will never change in terms of success. And in every profession, in every industry, in every business, there's about 5% at the very top who are successful, progressive, ambitious, early adopters, big spenders. There's like another 15% that are almost there, and there's 80% who have their heads firmly where the sun doesn't shine and are very reluctant to have them pried out. And so if you're attacking dentists only in Indianapolis, and there's 300 of them there, there's only 60 who are even going to pay attention. And there's really only 15 who might be good clients. But if you attack the 50,000 dentists in America, that 5% number is now 2,500.
Right.
And so when you cream a profession or an industry on a national basis, it's easier to get winners to surface and do business with you. National companies, of course, those who market themselves on a national or international basis, they may fit some categories of the criteria better in terms of their ability to spend, the size of opportunity, and so forth. You have to think about whether you're ready to tackle them, whether you're ready to travel, or whether you are able, as I am, to command that they all come to you. But those are the three sort of geographic questions.
Right.
Now, from there, we can move to some real specifics, if you want.
It's up to you.
Yeah, well, we can take a look at now sort of where rolls into how you
sure.
get clients.
Excellent.
And you can really divide all of the methods to get clients into active pursuit, or what I would call magnetic attraction. And the active pursuit items, most of them, I'll run down the list, most of them I have never done. Some of them I did only a long time ago. But they can all work, and some of them I have done. So let me just go down the list. You can advertise your services. And so, for example, you can go into trade journals like DM News and Target and Direct, and you'll go into the back and you will see copywriters running ads for themselves as copywriters, often offering free critiques. Last week's or the week before's issues of DM News, Bob Bly, who's an accomplished professional copywriter.
Yeah, he is. Author.
Bob had, which he periodically trots out and runs, a full-page ad for himself as a copywriter. So you can run these ads. And you can run them in the trades, and you're getting mostly mail order and direct marketing type companies. You can go into niches. So if you've been successful writing copy for a local dentist or a few dentists, now you go into the National Dental Trade Journal and run an ad announcing your availability to assist with dental marketing materials. I personally don't like it. I've never done it. But a lot of copywriters do it. Similarly, you can do direct mail in a community or in a niche or to certain types of advertisers, essentially making the same kinds of offers, free critiques, free consults, you'll do a critique on spec, that sort of thing. There are people, for example, there's one who I've consulted with who writes copy for Yellow Pages ads in five different industries. And he direct mails cold to leads he compiles out of the Yellow Pages of the smaller advertisers and offers to critique their ad for free and help them build a better ad and generates prospects that way. You can pick out prospects from industry directories. And so almost every industry, there's a national association, there's a state association, there's a local association, there's multiple associations. And so, for example, the client that was here today, if I wanted to go after commercial mortgage brokers and lenders like him all across the country, there's about 4,000 of them. They're all in the directory he had with him. Their addresses, the CEO's names, the email, the fax, and little statistics about how big they are, how many employees. It's all there for the taking. So you could pick out prospects from directories and proactively attack them. Something I did do early in my career is picking them off based on their own ads and mailings. Again, thinking back to the criteria, I want people who are already marketing. I want people who don't indicate by their marketing they're completely ignorant. I want a client that it looks like, oh, I'd spot something that I might be able to do for this client that would be effective. And I had a prospecting letter that I would send in response to their own direct mail or their own ads in order to open that door.
Now, a lot of these you've mentioned so far sound like a lot of work, and you're saying you didn't really do a lot of these. Is that right?
Yeah, I prefer magnetic attraction. I will confess that when we get to the magnetic attraction list, these things require a little more patience. So attracting people to you is a little slower and more ponderous than grabbing a club, going out, hitting one over the head, and dragging them back to the cave.
Right.
But, you know, you could certainly do these things. I think it is useful, if you are willing to do any personal prospecting at all, to have a little elevator speech, you know, a way that you describe what you do. And when I used to travel a lot early in my business career, I would get clients. I always flew first class in part for this reason. And I would get clients from people sitting next to me on planes and get them at conventions and get them at cocktail parties purely through conversational marketing. I can recall in two instances, once I was on an airplane and the guy sitting next to me was the CEO of a fairly big ad agency. And as a result of our conversation, he didn't actually hire me to write copy. He hired me to come in to four of his offices, spend 2 days in each office, and teach his people how to write copy. And that was a very lucrative contract. And another client who spent over $200,000 with me over several years came out of a conversation on an airplane. And in fact, I haven't used it in years. Now I don't want to talk to anybody at all. So usually when the person next to me now says, "What do you do?" I usually say I'm an IRS agent. That terminates conversation for the, you know, for the duration of the flight. If there's an empty seat, they usually move. But my old elevator speech was, so cocktail party request or airplane, you know, I'm so-and-so, what do you do? You know, like a wrong answer is I'm a copywriter. Because first of all, most people don't even know what the hell that is.
That's right.
Okay, in many cases, they think you're talking about copyright law.
Yep.
You know, it's not an answer that is going to open and continue a conversation that might be productive. And so my old elevator speech was, I work with entrepreneurs and companies to cut all the fat and waste out of their advertising and make their salespeople or sales efforts at least 500% more productive, guaranteed. And then I would shut up. And invariably, the business person says, well, how do you do that? And now that's permission to talk at length about what I do and how I do it, and usually to start asking questions about their business to see if they fit my criteria. And so that's personal prospecting. You can certainly exhibit at trade shows, and you can certainly offer to do beat the controls on spec. And we talked about that in the first call. You have to be careful who you do them for. But generally speaking, you can get in over the transom, if you choose to do beat the controls for established marketing companies. Now, that's all the active pursuit stuff. The attraction stuff that I prefer and recommend and encourage people to do is about putting yourself in a place, positioning yourself in a way that causes good clients to seek you out, certainly to feel like they are seeking you out, to initiate the conversation of, what can you do for me? And here are the things on that list. One is you publish. You get product out there. Yeah, certainly books help, and they do not necessarily have to be books with a real publisher who puts books on a bookstore shelf, although that can certainly help. They can be books that you distribute, that you self-publish, that look like they were published by real publishers. You can advertise them. I'd rather advertise the book in DM News than I would advertise my service. A newsletter, powerful tool. because you are now showing off your expertise, success examples, makeovers, to a target prospect list over and over and over again. If you look at like Jeff Fisher in Entrepreneur Magazine, and I can't think of the guy's name now who does it in Direct Magazine, but their regular monthly article is a makeover of a bad ad and how they would make it into a good ad. And that's great newsletter stuff.
Yeah.
And I do a fair amount of that in our newsletter as well. And I would say that over the years, probably 50% of all my clients have first been newsletter subscribers and have come out of the repeat exposure that has happened through the newsletter. Articles in magazines read by the clients you want. Extremely important and generally easy to get articles into trade and professional journals. They need content. Sort of crossover tactics. I had a client, for example, this is a real instructive story, so I'll tell it very quickly. I had a client some years ago. He didn't happen to be a copywriter. He was a speaker, but the process is the same, actually. And he lived in Minneapolis, and he really didn't want to travel anymore. He wanted to do a lot of local work, which is very hard to do in the speaking business. It's hard to be a prophet in your homeland. And he wanted to work for sizable corporations, doing a lot of in-depth leadership and management training, which is a miserable topic to try and sell. And he was trying to prospect and sending out prospecting letters and going and speaking places, and he was getting zero traction because he really needed to talk to the CEO, and he was getting to the human resource director, and he was getting stalled in middle management. And so his question to me was, how can I get to the CEO? And so the strategy we devised was that he was going to write a book, which was called 21st Century Breakthrough Leadership Techniques of Minneapolis Businesses. And so he was then going to write to all the CEOs that he had on his client hit list and say, I'm doing this book, and I want to interview you for the book because we've identified your company as one that exemplifies progressive management and leadership, and I want to come in and interview you for the book. I don't recall the exact numbers now, but I'm going to get it real close. That basic pitch went to 200 CEOs and generated 120 appointments. So now he's got his face-to-face appointments with 120 of the CEOs that he's identified as his ideal client prospects.
Wow.
And he's going to go in and, of course, interview them for the book, but now he's having an hour-long conversation with the CEO about leadership and management tactics and strategies and problems. And, of course, the CEO is telling him about his problems and frustrations in his company. And the interviewer, the author, is telling him about other case histories from his clients. Well, this does not require a great deal of sales competency.
Okay.
At some point in time, the CEO is going to ask the question, hey, do you think you could do anything for us?
Right.
And if you could, what do you think you could do? And so that gave him his book of business and kept him busy for many, many years. So that's kind of a crisscross between the two strategies.
Great.
So you can do surveys. You can do polls. You can issue white papers. So, you know, again, if you want to write copy for dentists, you can go to all the dentists you identify as good prospects with the fact that you're a marketing expert and you're going to issue this white paper on new marketing strategies used by successful dentists, and they need to fill out this little survey. And if they fill out the survey, they'll get a copy of the finished white paper free. And now you have dentists filling out surveys telling you what they're doing smart, what they're doing dumb, what their frustrations are, what their marketing problems are. Now you compile all of that, and you actually create the white paper that goes back out to them, which is actually a sales letter for why they need a professional copywriter and a marketing consultant. And coincidentally, you happen to be that. So you publish. A second thing you do is you speak. And you got to get good at it because there's no more powerful place to be than in front of a group where there is at least one basic principles, it will generate people coming to you asking the magic question, can you do stuff for us? And in many cases, it can generate a lot of business in a hurry. Back now 20 years ago, probably, I've lost track of the time, but I spoke at five of Gary Halbert's seminars in Key West, Florida, and I made sure I was on the first day, and I offered free 20-minute face-to-face consultations to anybody who wanted them, and then for the next 3 days, I worked my ass off, starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, before the seminar started each day, and working every lunch and every dinner break, and starting again at 10 o'clock at night and going until midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning in order to get everybody's consults in. And from the first seminar, I don't remember the rest of them, but the first seminar I remember very, very well. I walked out of there with $210,000 of business.
Wow.
So that's a very powerful thing to do. Seminars, filling your own seats, not a topic we have anywhere near time to deal with tonight, but it is an effective strategy. From 1983 to 1987, I had a company, I did some of the presentations, we had another speaker did most of them, but we did free introductory seminars to sell a particular program to chiropractors and dentists. We had over 12,000 doctors and some 300 seminars we conducted all across the country. And out of those came lots and lots, not only of the marketing program we sold, but of copywriting requests. At the time, we had a little factory doing Yellow Pages ads for doctors, for example, at $1,500 an ad. And I think in an average month, we were doing 50 to 60 of them. And they were all coming out of the seminars. And if you use a strategy to fill your own seats, in a niche, which is the easiest thing to do, you can really control this process. And you can be in five market areas in 5 nights with driving distance in between and have 20 or 30 prospects in each seminar and present yourself. Host Parasite, very useful. It's not a strategy you want to rely on for life, but it can be a great launch strategy. And so what you want here is a host, someone who has influence, who is providing some kind of product or service to a group of people who could use you, who need sales materials written for them. The host doesn't provide it. The host doesn't want to provide it. He knows they need it. His influence with them is useful. He will endorse you, whether for money or not, and arrange to put you in front of them somehow. So I have a coaching member, for example, her name is Shirley Hansen, and basically she's a copywriter for websites, for professionals, financial advisors, lawyers, doctors, etc., and really just getting started in the field. And a large financial product firm that provides products for resale to financial advisors arranged to have her do teleseminars for all their advisors. Talking to them about topics very common to us, unique selling proposition, target marketing, how to figure out what your particular sales message ought to be as a financial advisor, and right on the teleseminar, she sold them essentially a copywriting service, although not called that, to interview them and their clients, come up with their unique selling proposition, and then create or make over their website, their brochure, their prospecting letters, their complete marketing kit. And she took dozens and dozens of clients in all at one time, replicated the process with another host in the same industry. So working through somebody who can put you in front of, phone, person, by mail, whatever, a group, a clump of prospective clients all needing fundamentally the same work, and will give their endorsement, very, very, very powerful. Corporate training is another way to create demand. And so almost any time that I have gone into a company to do direct marketing training for a group of their as recently as a year ago. Any time I've gone in to do this, I've walked out the door with copywriting work. Because when you show them how to do it, and they get that you know how to do it better than they'll ever know how to do it,
right.
And generally speaking, they now want you to do it.
Right.
The same thing with coaching type advice.